Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Greg, and we've only got two people on today to talk about one of the most important games in Tottenham's modern history. So let's get things started. Leading us off, and finishing us off, I suppose, as well, is my sidekick, Ben Daniels. Ben, how are you doing this lovely evening?
Honestly, better than I was doing all day. I took off work today so I could watch the match, and I was an absolute wreck for I don't know how many hours happened in a day before the game started, but it was way too many. I don't know why they don't start those games at 8 o'clock in the morning so I can get it over with and move on with my life. I was a fucking wreck all morning.
Well, I'm glad you centered on the important issue of today's match, which is why doesn't England cater more to the needs of its American fan base? You know, I think that's something that's gone underreported and undercommented upon for a very long time. And, you know, just when will we start getting the attention we deserve?
Thank you. Thank you for asking those hard questions.
I know. The real questions. When will modern football finally respect the American fan? That's what I want to know. But those are questions for another day at another time. Let's talk about this game. This was, I agree with you, Ben. I was very, very stressed out. And this game sort of, I guess in the run-up to it, I sort of convinced myself that it was going to be one of two things and nothing in between. We were either going to get our asses kicked or we were just going to run all over them. I thought the first was more likely than the second, but we really didn't get either of those, did we?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, my best-case scenario was a lot less optimistic than yours. I kind of thought we would, be like the Man City game where we took a tight 1-0 lead away from home and hoped for the best. But, yeah, I mean, this game, we neither massacred nor were massacred. So,
well, there was that 20 minutes there, and one of our best players was lying in a pool of his own blood, so maybe we were kind of massacred. But
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be a Spurs match these days without somebody getting cripplingly injured in the middle of the game. So,
well, let's
I don't
talk
know
about
why we would have expected any less.
Let's talk about injuries now. That's a good enough time to talk about it. I mean, we know we've been a walking MASH unit for God at least since February, if not sooner or earlier than that. Today felt like I don't think there was a game that sort of, I don't know, where I felt it quite as keenly as this one. I mean, I think you saw it, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but you saw it a little bit against West Ham at the weekend where this team looked drained, but just this team didn't look drained as much as, bereft of options. I mean, you know, thank God Sissoko was actually ready to play real minutes, and we'll get to that a little bit later as well, but they really look like, I mean, it really, you know, just the way we weren't able to play our game against Ajax and then how another player goes down. This is probably the most gruesome injury of the year. It was just with Vertonghen. I mean, I don't know. It felt like we were playing such a different game than we would have liked to have been playing. And it really underlined how bad our injury crisis has been this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's devastating. You know, we have Fernando Llorente on our team and does what he does. He's ancient.
I thought he played way better than I was expecting him to today, to be 100% honest with you.
When you have Fernando Llorente as your backup striker, you're never expecting your backup striker to play this kind of minutes we've had to rely on him this season between Kane's injuries, Son's injuries, suspensions, international duty, whatever the fuck Son's gotten up to all season. You know, I mean, to be in a Champions League semifinal and having to start Fernando Llorente as opposed to either of our first choice strikers, you know you're in a bad shape just to begin with. And then, you know, I mean, Lamella, I don't even know if he's on this team anymore, but obviously he was hurt. You know, you look at our bench going into this game, and Musa Sissoko was like, that was our attacking option. Bringing on Musa Sissoko was the only way we could positively
followed by Foyth. This game. I mean, yeah. those are our most attacking options.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bad situation to be in. And, you know, even irrespective of who's out and who's on the bench, the guys who were playing, you know, we had Dele Alli, who, like, broke his arm a month ago. We have Wanyama, who really hasn't been fit all season. Fernando Llorente, who, despite being fit, isn't actually fit enough to play more than 30 minutes at a time. You know, Eriksen has played God knows how many minutes lately and looks it. I mean, you know, Serge Aurier's been hurt, so Trippier's run himself into the ground. Like, just no aspect of this team is fully functional at the moment. And for the first 20, 30 minutes or so, you know, that really was apparent. I mean, Ajax pressed us high up the pitch. They passed through us. They killed us. And, you know, they scored in the 15th minute, and it was very deserved. You know, I mean, Danny Rose could have maybe stretched a little bit better. Kieran Trippier could have maybe maintained the offside line a little bit better. But, like, you know, a goal was coming. They were all over us. They had corner kick after corner kick.
I would dispute that a little bit. Like, I feel like they had a lot of – what was that term Wenger had a few years ago? Like pointless possession. I can't remember what it was.
Like sterile possession.
Sterile possession. I feel like our plan was kind of working. They were cutting into us a little bit more, and then that goal was – I mean, it was a really good pass. I think you're right in that it was coming, but to me it felt like the sort of the dam broke after the goal. And that's when they starting with the goal, it felt like is when they really started cutting us open. And I don't know if that's because we were back on our heels or what they were doing was just starting to work. But that was my impression watching the match.
See, I don't know. I felt like they were just all over us. I mean, their press was very intense. We weren't coping with it well. We didn't have a midfield that was capable of, you know, distributing the ball.
I agree with that. We were not, our weird counterattacking thing that we were trying to do wasn't really working.
I mean, nothing worked. I mean, we were trying to go long to Fernando Llorente, and he was trying to flick on to Lucas Moura running on, and, you know, because we were so pinned back, because we had no support in midfield, you know, those runners just weren't there. They couldn't get high up the pitch fast enough when we went long to Llorente. So he was just sort of a man on an island. And then when the ball did go through midfield, you know, we had Wanyama trying his best. I mean, it was not pretty, but, like, you know, even when he would win the ball, he couldn't make a pass. I think he had 55% pass completion in the first half. It was just awful to watch. We could not get the ball out of our own half. Until, I guess, shortly after the goal, you know, we'd started in this, like, back three with wingbacks setup. And after the goal, we moved Danny Rose into kind of a midfield diamond like he played against West Ham, where Danny and Eriksen were alongside Wanyama, and then Vertonghen shuffled out to left back. And I think that was the moment we started to get a little bit of a grip on the game. But it still wasn't pretty until Vertonghen's concussion.
Yeah, that was the prettiest part of the game.
That was the moment that it all started looking nice, when he was lying there pouring blood out of his nose.
Ben, I believe the term you're looking for, and I say this with a lot of experience, is busted wide open.
Boy, he sure was.
Yeah, no, he was... I was actually thinking, like, that's the most blood I've seen come out of a guy's face in a while. I mean...
Yeah, it was a lot. And I remember, like, seeing that, like, free kick play develop, and it ends with, like, Toby and Jan both on the ground, lying there, writhing around. And I was just like, is this what we're reduced to? Like,
yeah.
Is this what it's come to? And then they showed a close-up of his face, and I was just like, oh, my God. This is the worst thing I've ever seen. I'm so sorry for ever doubting you.
I said to the person I was watching it with, I was like, he's just rolled around faking it. And they went back, and it's like, just like, there's like a puddle of blood on the grass under him, and... I mean, it was a product. Ajax's keeper was very aggressive all day, and frankly, I thought he was a little lucky not to get caught out once or twice, but especially on those set pieces. But I don't know if it was he caught Toby in the thing or that guy's fist just cuffed him in the face. But I mean,
I think it was the back of Toby's head caught Jan's face. Like, they were both heading in opposite directions and just headed each other.
Well, that guy was also crashing into them, so...
He was, yeah. I mean, I think they would have maybe managed that aerial a little better without it, but... I don't know. I want to talk about, like, the absolute failure of the concussion protocol.
It was...
I think we can save that for after, like, the breakdown of the game.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get back to that. But, I mean, Vertonghen going off, obviously we hope Jan is fine, and that was awful, and you never want to see any player go down, let alone one of your best players like that. But, I mean, I think it forced Pochettino's hand, and he puts Sissoko on, and my guess is we would have seen that sooner rather than later anyway, but we looked way better after that. And even if we didn't look quite as incisive as Ajax did during those, that sort of, I don't know, what'd you say, 20 minutes, 15 minutes of their dominance, like, I mean, I feel like Ajax had, what, maybe two real chances after we put Sissoko on? We really shut their game down after he came on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, it was night and day. I mean, you know, we've said this so many times, and I will never stop being surprised saying it, but Moussa Sissoko made such a huge difference out there in a way that I would never believe. And, you know, I still haven't adjusted to this new reality where Moussa Sissoko is the guy that shores up our midfield and makes everything tick. But,
well, part of it is... Go ahead. I'm sorry, Ben.
No, that was it. That was my punchline.
So part of it is, I mean, the surprising part was the competent play and his ability to progress the ball, which is, I think Pochettino really does deserve a lot of credit for figuring that out. But also was, I think they brought him in for the Victor Wanyama memorial enforcer role where, I mean, he was bodying Ajax players all over the pitch. And I think Michael was saying this to me, you know, there was an element of Tottenham's midfield just, like, decided to make Ajax pay a price for trying to do some of the stuff they were doing, and eventually they stopped. Like, there's a reason that some of those incisive and passing moves and pressing either stopped or stopped working after a while, and that was because I don't think they had the stomach to keep doing it. You know, I don't think, you know, those guys wanted to keep running into, you know, the brick wall that is Moussa Sissoko and some of our other players.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the rare game that I'll say the referee had a bad performance, but it was in our favor. But, I mean, we really were getting away with murder. We had so many tackles, like, through the back of guys' legs, you know, really grapply challenges in midfield where we were just able to, like, physically move them off the ball and take it from them. And I think, you know, another ref might have clamped down on that a little bit better to Ajax's advantage. I mean, I think typically when we have a bad ref who lets a lot go, it's because we're playing Burnley and we're the good team and they're the ones shithousing us, and it's very frustrating. But in this game, we got to be the shithousers, and that is what Spurs do best. And, you know, giving us that rope to just murder them a little bit in midfield, you know, all their dainty passing and cute little triangles and impressive, you know, geometry across the field, fuck them. We'll just run through them.
Hey, that's a nice pass you have there. Shame if Moussa Sissoko's thigh happened to your leg. It's just... But this game sort of underlines... I want to talk about bringing the sort of exactly what I meant by how much I felt our sort of injury crisis in this game in particular. There were two elements that really made me feel this in terms of, like, yeah, you watch what Sissoko was able to do and you think, like, what if Eric Lamela was in here? What if we had a guy, you know, who could just, like you said, just shithouse people? Like, you know, okay, you need to break up their pretty little passing moves. Like, here's Eric Lamela with some elbows and, you know, some teeth. And the other thing is, like, Lucas Moura, who I actually thought played a decent game today and was fairly threatening, but, like, watching him, I don't know if this is the sort of comparison you drew, Ben, but it felt like I was watching sort of, like, you know, like Hunming Son's non-union Mexican equivalent. It was just like, to make a obscure Simpsons reference, it was just sort of like, yeah, this is fine, you know, but every time he got on a ball, and even when he would make, like, really good attacking runs or a nice sort of, like, pass, all I could think is, like, what would have Son have done with that? Like, what would Heung-Min Son have... I mean, and that's not an injury crisis specifically, but obviously he wasn't playing. But all I could think of... Because Mora had a couple really threatening runs in the box, and you could see the Ajax defenders starting to panic a little bit. And I'm like, Jesus, what if we had a guy who knew when to shoot doing this? And just missing those guys who could do the things that we were doing so much more effectively than we were able to do really killed me today.
Yeah, I mean, fuck Lucas Mora, he's a fascist. Whatever.
Yes.
But... I mean, he left his heart out on the field today. Nope. Like, he ran himself.
That's why you have a guy like him on the team.
Like, he does. He lacks a little bit of quality that Son has. He's still very good, and I thought.
Yes, and imagine what
he did a lot of really good things. I think it was less a problem of having Lucas instead of Son, so much as we only had Lucas and we didn't have Son or Harry Kane or anyone actually good for him to play off of. You know, because Fernando Llorente, even though. Did some good things. It's just not complete enough. Can't run, can't move.
After Sissoko came on, he was doing some nice link up play. He was spraying some nice passes, but you could see there was a move really early in the second half where he gets the ball right at the edge of Ajax's box, and he like jukes like three guys, and just actually gets a clear shot. And if it would have been Harry Kane, like you know, he rips a shot off there. Dele Alli. Would have ripped a shot off of there. Dele actually took the ball off him and did just that. But, you know, his reaction time is just not there. He can't move that quick. And, you know, it was like shit like that all day.
Yeah, I just wasn't quite there. There's a time where Lucas, you know, or Llorente juked himself into space and just sort of took one touch too many, kind of got it caught up in his feet before he took a shot, and then Ajax were able to put the block in, and had he been able to pull the trigger, you know, after he made his first good move, might have been something. But
I mean,
you know, a guy like Llorente,
I actually thought
you have to take like six touches before he actually pulls a trigger.
There's been a lot of people on Twitter. I've seen a lot of pundits sort of like, you know, slurping all over Ajax and what beautiful football they played. And I can't deny they played some really nice football for that 15 to 20 minutes there, and had a few good chances after that. But, yeah, like, I don't know. I watched this game today, and I just thought, like, they got, I don't want to say really lucky. They got lucky enough, though. Like, you know, Spurs had a couple shots that just didn't come off. Obviously, Spurs were just super injured. But they got, I don't know. Today felt more like Ajax riding their luck than any sort of, like, grandmaster plan.
Like, for the most part, our best chances came off of headers, off of set pieces. You know, they're low percentage chances. Like,
well, Ajax set pieces defense was terrible. I mean, we kept getting it behind.
It was terrible. But, like, when that's your best option, even though we're getting a lot of shots from those opportunities, they're still not great shots. Like, we had nothing remotely on the level of Van de Beek's shot.
You're right.
You know, inside our own 8-yard box. Well, there's not a box, but you know what I mean. You know, with no defenders in front of him. We had nothing like that all day. There was one chance that Dele had inside the box where he put it a little too close to the keeper and it got saved. But for the most part, we were reduced to headers, set pieces, crosses, you know, not a lot of high leverage opportunities for scoring. And even though we created a lot of those opportunities and we looked good doing it, you know, we weren't able to break them down in the way that you would want.
You're absolutely right about that. Maybe I'm just getting frustrated that they got to play.
Expected goals had the game 1.1 to 0.5 in Ajax's favor, with a lot more shots for Spurs, but a lot worse shots for Spurs. And I think it's a pretty accurate telling of the story. You know, I think if things go a little differently, maybe we play that first chance offside and we ride through it and we can steal a win here. But, you know, even with everything that went well in the second half and as good as we ended up playing, you know, they still had that chance where David Neres got inside the box and curled one right onto Hugo's far post. And, you know, that could have just as easily gone in, and it's 2-0 and we're dead and buried. So, you know, and I don't want to say that Ajax got lucky here because they also got pretty unlucky that this tie isn't over.
There's that. I mean, again, I think Ajax, if I'm to bitch about Ajax's luck, where their luck really comes in is Son's out and half this team is dead. But, I mean, there's nothing we can do about that or they can do about that. So, I don't know. I just felt a little hard done by the way this game went, considering, again, like, I think Poch clearly got it wrong, and I think probably some of that came from he didn't want to risk Sissoko for a while, and it ended up working out, but he clearly, in a way, like, we were talking about the Poch's own version of the, like, you know, oh, do I want to start, I've got an injured player, like, Diego Costa for Atletico a few years ago. Do I want to risk it? Well, Poch chose not to risk it, and he pretty much paid the price for it. Because I think if we started a team like this with Sissoko today, I'm not sure that Ajax has that period of dominance that they had.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a question of how fit was Moussa Sissoko. How many minutes were we planning on playing him before injury forced our hand? You know, like, I mean, I definitely thought that he faded as the game progressed. You know, he didn't seem to have 50, 60 minutes in him. You know, I mean, he gave us a lot, but I think starting a guy like that and, you know, where 60 minutes is the best case scenario, I get not wanting to risk it, especially because we have an important game this weekend. We have another leg next week. Like, you know, managing those minutes of players, especially off of injuries, it's hard. It's really hard.
Especially in a year where those guys have just had to play so much because everyone else is dead.
Right, and then when we do rush people back, they get hurt again, and, you know, like, it's the last thing we need right now. And so, you know, I don't fault Pochettino for not starting Moussa Sissoko, but it sure made a difference when he came on. I mean, the second half, like, the first half, we got battered for 20 minutes and then played our way out of it pretty okay to see out the half. But the second half, I mean, we came out so strong.
We almost scored right away.
Right away. Like, straight off the kickoff. I mean, like, it seemed like a real, like, planned move where Dele dropped it back. Fernando just took off running straight off the kickout. Like, I don't know if you noticed this, but, like, he lined up like a wide receiver, like, way outside the center circle. And Dele dropped it back from the whistle, and he just bolted towards the box. And, you know, it almost paid off. Like, we played it to him. He laid it back. It was a couple moves. Like, it was almost a thing. And it was a really neat thing to see. And I don't think we've seen anything like that from Pochettino before. But, like, that was a clearly planned, like, kickoff routine, which was fun and exciting. But it really set the tone. Like, I think it kind of, like, shocked Ajax back onto their heels a little bit. You know, I don't think they were expecting us to come out like that, you know, after that first half. And we kept some good pressure on for a little while afterwards where
it's what
we
do best.
Had a lot of the ball. Yeah, I mean,
we put the pressure on.
We do put the pressure on. That is our mantra. But, you know, and I do wonder, like, had we played maybe a little less conservatively or a little less timidly in the first half?
I think it's down to,
maybe we could have, like, shocked them.
We didn't have a midfield. We didn't have a midfield. And I think he made a calculated risk, took a calculated risk, and it didn't work. And, you know, I could see, like, you could see the beginnings of it. It took Ajax, like, about 15, 10 minutes to really find their feet against us. I mean, they weren't having effective possession, that sterile possession. That's mostly what they were having until they, you know, then they started to cut us open a little bit. But and even then, it took a really nice move for them to score on us. That wasn't like a simple, like, ripping us apart. Like, that was a really intricate little move.
Right, and that pass was phenomenal, to thread it past Danny Rose and Toby to find Van de Beek in the box.
Yeah, and
it was like a 20-yard pass. Like, it was a very nice piece of...
You could see what Poch was thinking, and I'm not sitting here being like, what the hell was he doing? Because between the injury concerns and everything else, I definitely see what he was trying to do. It's just, it didn't work, and sometimes that shit happens, especially when you're on such fine margins. I want to talk about some of the play of some of our players. We've talked a little bit about Lucas. We've obviously sung the praises of Moussa Sissoko, which I think for once we're not even doing ironically. I mean, Sissoko, genuinely great player. And I remarked to Michael while I was watching it, it was how great if we actually manage to land a midfielder or something next year. How great is it going to be to have Moussa Sissoko as like a plan B or C? And I mean that completely sincerely, and that's not a dig at Sissoko at all. It's just, how great is it going to be to have this guy who could progress the ball where he's either not your primary midfield option or you can just sort of, like, rotate into using him and you're not just counting on this sort of, like, broken system where you found a guy who kind of makes it work. It's going to be really nice to be able to, hopefully, assuming we actually buy someone, it's going to be really nice to use him that way.
Sissoko has done Herculean work becoming our first choice midfielder, but if Mizuka was our fourth choice midfielder, boy, are we in better shape.
Or even second or third. Honestly, I don't want to sell Sissoko under any circumstances. I mean, if someone's willing to, like, back up a Brinks truck, all right, go West, young man. But, you know, like, I'm really not looking to get rid of Sissoko next year. Like, I am perfectly happy keeping that guy on the team and going and buying one or two other midfielders and just pushing him down the pecking order.
Yeah, I mean, like, offload Wanyama and then keep a midfield stable of Winks, Dyer, Sissoko, and new star midfielder, plus whatever contributions we get from Dele and Eriksen, if we keep Eriksen, you know, and, you know, obviously the evolution of Juan Foyth into midfielder, which is definitely going to happen.
Which should definitely happen after today, yeah. But, I mean, Sissoko was great. I mean, I think you could say it like unqualified 100%, really, really good performance today in a way that was completely planned for and totally worked.
Yep.
But yeah, I want to talk about some of the other guys. I want to talk about, I think it deserves special credit, and we talked about him a lot on this podcast, but Danny Rose, I fucking love Danny Rose, and I'm so happy that he's played his way back into this team and played his way back into fitness. And just like, I mean, everything you love about Danny Rose is on display today. He was getting into fights with other teams' players, for all of Danny Rose's aggression and hard charging, he is really good at timing his last-second tackles. I mean, he saved us a couple times today, but I feel like I never have to worry about him giving up a penalty unless it hits him in his hand. But, I mean, he had a couple of those today. You know, he's, like, rushing back, diving in, and it's clean as a whistle, and it's great. I love Danny Rose. I really genuinely hope we give that guy an extension and he just plays the rest of his prime with us. Because he's good enough to, and it looks like his health is getting back where we need it to be, even if it's maybe not where it was.
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked a little bit better of a end ball from him.
I think that's why Davies came in at the end of the game, honestly.
Yeah, like he was making really good overlapping runs. He was getting into space. He was, you know, doing decent things. But like, you know, again, he's never been like the best crosser of the ball. And with this setup, crossing was kind of what we were set up to do. So that was what he was doing. And it's not his strength, and it's not what he should be doing. And yeah, it didn't quite work out. But yeah, I think by and large, very pleased with Danny. You know, we didn't concede a lot down his flank. And, you know, once he moved into midfield in the first half, like, he did a good job there.
He's great. A
weird utility man.
I think in a lot of ways he is Pochettino's biggest success story.
You know, well, the Sissoko, I think, is with less of a, like, Danny Rose.
Danny Rose was not a very good fullback before Mauricio Pochettino showed up at Spurs. He was a speed merchant. I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, Danny Rose was not a good left back. That's definitely true. But Moussa Sissoko did not look like he belonged in the Premier League.
No, you're right. You're right. I don't know.
But he never took as good as Sissoko has been, which has been good. It's never been Danny Rose was the best left back in England.
No, you're right. But you got both of them into World Cup squads. I don't know. I love Danny Rose.
Got the World Cup, though.
Oh, that's a good point. Never mind. Anyway, I don't know. I'm very... I don't know. There's always...
Just to make this quick digression. Man, if the World Cup was like 1 year later, Moussa Sissoko would be a World Cup winner right now.
Yes.
I don't know how much we're playing, but like... He was like a mainstay in that France side until he became so bad at Spurs that it was just indefensible for any coach to call him up. But
that guy must just be... I mean, it sounds like, by all accounts, Moussa Sissoko is an incredibly lovely man who is widely beloved by all his teammates. But he must just be like... he just must be like a physical specimen on the training pitch or something, because he has always been sort of... Like, even when he's playing really bad on the field, you can tell the coaches are always a little reluctant to sort of completely disentangle themselves from him. Both at the France setup and at Spurs, at least in my experience. And he must just be a very impressive human being on a lot of levels to engender that level of loyalty from his managers.
No, I agree. Sorry, I know we were trying to not talk about Mississauga.
No, I mean, he deserves it for once.
I can't help it.
Yeah, I mean, that guy is a fucking... Look at him. I mean, just look at him. He's beautiful, he's large, he's good at football now. Like, come on. Let's talk about some other players. Juan Foyth. Foyth again, I mean, I know at that point when they brought him on, I think it was the 80-somethingth minute, Ajax was just bunkering in. They weren't looking to get out, but... I'm once again struck by how good he is on the ball, especially when he has space around him.
Yeah, he's fucking delightful. I love watching him. I mean, he looks like an Ajax center back. He looks like an Ajax center back playing in a center midfield. He looks, you know, he's just so confident on the ball at every possible opportunity, no matter what's going on. He just has such a swagger. I love watching him.
Midfield. Put him in midfield. He was basically doing it today.
Yeah, I mean, the way he was just, like, taking guys on, calm on the ball, you know, picking out smart passes, putting a couple good crosses. Excuse me. I love Juan Foyth. I want more Juan Foyth.
We've had this conversation before, but I am just stunned at the quantum leap we've seen out of Foyth this year. Nothing we saw. I mean, Spurs scouts clearly saw something, but like nothing we saw out of Juan Foyth before this season indicated he was this good on the ball, had this level of vision, you know, was this comfortable dealing with attackers. I mean,
I don't think that's true. I think we've always known that he was
okay.
Sassy on the ball. I think
capable of doing it against
actually. Yeah,
capable of doing it against top level opponents is what I'm saying. Like, if you told me he would have a performance like this against like, and I don't want to get carried away. This wasn't like an all timer performance, but some of the performances he's had this year. If you told me he did it against like Fulham in the cup or some shit like that, or like, you know, Huddersfield in the league, I'd believe you. But like, he has been playing well above what anything he demonstrated before the season, at least in games. He did not look this comfortable in games last year. I mean, he did not look this comfortable in games early this year. I don't know what to say. It's just he took something happened. I don't know if he just needed the foot up his ass because he wanted to get out of here because he wasn't getting minutes. And all of a sudden, but like, I don't know. I think this guy's going to be a fixture in our defense or our midfield for a while.
And credit to Pochettino again because I don't know if it was his first start, but one of his early starts, like he had that game where he gave away two penalties. And I think it was
right
easy
after his first start, yeah. But he stuck with him
to say, you know what, fuck this guy, he's a liability. And instead, he was like, nope, this guy's got the goods, this shit happens, and here we are. He's now our best right back, our second best midfielder, just maybe our best striker besides Harry Kane. Who knows?
Build him a statue, is what you're saying, right?
Not yet, but when he scores a hat trick in the next leg, definitely.
He's just, I'm just so delighted at how good he's been, and really a credit to Pochettino and whatever friend he has who scouted him, but it's been really pleasant to watch and very, very, you know, just very enjoyable. He's so good, he's so sassy. It's very like Lamella-esque, a little toned down, but just very fun guy to watch, and I thought he acquitted himself well today. He wasn't asked to do a whole lot, but you know, dealt with a couple outlets Ajax had after he came on and just looked really good. It just really a delight.
I mean, we brought on him and Davis at the same time in the last 10, 15 minutes, you know, to freshen up our fullback situation. And Foyth was definitely the more impressive of the two. And Ben Davis has been playing left back his entire goddamn life, you know.
And is known to be an attacking left back. So, you know, like we definitely brought him on to, like, improved the passing on our left-hand side in the final third, and I thought Foyth's passing was much more important to setting up what attacks we produced, or at least, like, setting the foundation for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely good. The flip side of Juan Foyth, though, is we need to talk about Dele Alli, I think, because I don't understand what's going on with that man. I mean, he had that one move in the first half where he, like, took it off the side of his foot and then back heel flicked it into the box, and it was, like, deserved a goal. It was a gorgeous piece of technical skill. And then besides that, I don't know what he was doing out there today.
I think he was, I don't know. I feel like he struggled a bit since he broke his hand, which is understandable.
Play soccer with your hands, Greg.
I mean, I don't think he was bad per se, but he was certainly more anonymous than I come to expect from Dele Alli.
Bad per se. I mean, he just gave the ball away cheaply. He was
giving the ball away cheaply looks like Kieran Trippier. That guy sucked today. I mean,
yeah, but that guy always sucks. So
not like this.
I will say to Trippier's credit, like his set piece delivery in the first half was very strong. It was the only opportunities we ever looked like scoring on. You know, he put the ball in dangerous places. Yes, one of those places was so dangerous it concussed Jan Vertonghen. But other than that, you know, I thought his delivery was very good in the first half. You know, he didn't get battered. He was Kieran Trippier, you know. And it got worse as the game went on, but I mean, I thought Dele Alli again was worse, frankly. I mean, he pressed well. He always presses well. He puts in a defensive shift, but, like, good Lord. I mean, I thought he overplayed every ball into his feet. He tried to dribble through guys and just turn the ball over cheaply. I don't know.
No,
I can't
we
with
needed.
Dele Alli right now.
I mean, I think something that to be said is, I think, with all the injuries, we needed Eriksen or Dele to really step it up today. We needed somebody to really step it up today, and that just, I don't know. I don't think it happened. And,
yeah,
you know,
Eriksen was bad too. And like, and they both played so many minutes, and, you know, because we have so many injuries, they've just had to keep going whenever fit. You know, I mean, good Lord, poor Christian Eriksen has played way more minutes than anyone should with this kind of schedule, you know, with the tasks that he's asked to do. But yeah, just wasn't on it today.
Which is going to happen. It just would be nice if it didn't happen against Ajax in the semifinals of the Champions League. Yeah, they're going to have good games next week. They're going to have real good games next week if we want to advance, which isn't, I think we should point out, isn't insurmountable. You know, we got to go score twice, or if we score once, it sends it into overtime. But I don't know. You know, this is not easy, but it's doable. It's manageable, especially considering we're going to have Son back. I would imagine Sissoko will be ready to play at least large portions of that match. You know, I would imagine we're going to look fresh for that game. I would hope, even though we have another important game this weekend. But, you know, I mean, you know, we're going in the second leg of a semifinal in the Champions League with a realistic chance of progressing. That's really all you can ask for at this point in the year. It'd be nice to be going in that game with a lead, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, and I think, you know, yes, Ajax were maybe standing off a little bit with a one-goal lead in the second half, but, like, the way we played in that half, I believe, like, this team is there to be beaten. I mean,
yes, I agree.
They did not play us off the park. You know, they did not whip our ass. You know, they looked good. They did some pretty things. They scored a good goal. But, you know, once Moussa Sissoko came on, that game changed. And if we have Moussa Sissoko for 90 minutes, I can play them in midfield the way we did today, and actually have a guy like Heung-min Son on the pitch who, you know, is a threat, is dynamic, can dribble, can score, can pass, can do all the things that we know Heung-min Son can do. It seems to me like an eminently winnable game.
Well,
you know,
saw,
we win games away from home all the time.
You saw how terrified Ajax's defense, or at least how panicked their defense looked when Moura started running at them a couple times in this game. Like, I don't, like I said, I was just like trying to imagine what would happen if, you know, if that was Son doing it. Like, oh my god!
Yeah, I mean, I think we can fuck them up.
Yep, I don't think it's a given, but you know, I think we got a shot. And you know, that is,
I mean,
all.
The best thing I can say for us is that Ajax does not seem like a team that is going to try and sit back on a one-goal lead at home and try and bunker us out of the game, which I think would be, you know, is notoriously the hardest thing for us to cope with. But I think their DNA, their ethos is they're going to fucking try and play football with us. And we're a better team with better players. And if they want to go toe-to-toe with us, I think we can smash them. I really do.
Well, that's the nice thing about that leg is if we get into a shootout, all of our goals are away goals at this point. So
that's right. We just got to win. Let's win.
Let's do it. Well, we have some other games to talk about.
Well, before we go, I want to talk
about... you know what? You're right. I forgot. Let's talk about Vertonghen's injury. I think... Go ahead. I'll let you start, Ben.
I mean... You see a guy laying on the pitch, losing that much blood, and it calls into question every medical procedure, any concussion protocols that the league, the Champions League, the team has in place, because what we did was unconscionable. You know, like, there was no way that man's nose was pouring that much blood from a hit to the face and he didn't have a concussion.
Well, like, so here's the thing. Here's the thing that drives me nuts about this. You can convince me maybe there's a world in which that's just he got caught bad, he's bleeding a lot, you know, he doesn't have a concussion. Okay, maybe that's what happened. What is not excusable to me, what is really just awful to me, is that, like, with that much blood, with a blow that clearly was that hard to the head, like, how are you not taking more time than that to, like, give this guy a once-over? You know what? Like, you should be taking him into the tunnel, you know, like, having, like, doing your tests in there, taking your time. Like, clearly, if he got whacked in the face like that, you should be way more thorough than they were.
Right, and it's fucked because it's like, well, as long as he's not subbed out, you know, the game goes on and he's off the pitch and we're just playing with 10 men. And that's fucked up. Like, that's not how you should deal with a head injury. Like, the game should stop and we should deal with this because it is a serious problem for athletes' health. And you know, to force teams to make this quick decision of, okay, we got to either sub him and burn one of our three substitutions that we get all game on a guy who might be fine, or we're just rushing back out there because we don't want to change our system. We don't want to burn a sub. We want to win this game, and he's a good player. Like, that's a fucked up decision that you're putting on teams to have to make. You know, like, you can't play out the rest of the half a man down to put Jan Vertonghen through his paces to do an actually effective concussion protocol. I mean, like, he came back on the pitch, and, like, the second he started moving at a light jog, he was, like, collapsing from dizziness.
He literally couldn't walk off the pitch.
Right. Like, you know, why is nobody putting him through a light jog on the touchline before they send him back out? Like, hey, Jan, give us a sprint. See how that goes. Not so hot? Okay. You know, like, there's no time for it. There's no inclination for it. The incentives are all fucked because, again, you've got to manage the game that's still going on while this man is bleeding from his head. Like, how is that acceptable?
It's not.
I don't care if we have 20 minutes of stoppage time to clear this up. Like, let teams run a proper concussion protocol to actually evaluate the health of their player. And you know what? If he turns out it's fine and, you know, yes, you're going to get some time-wasting bullshit out of it. You're going to get teams faking it to try and squeeze minutes off a clock. Like, whatever. That's fucking fine. Maybe it kills your momentum. I don't care. Like, the downside risk of teams being shitheads about it, like gaming the system, is not worth. Like, we know, we've seen professional athletes with head injuries. It's very, very bad for their long-term health. And for a lot of guys, it doesn't end up being very long-term because it fucking scrambles your brain and bad shit happens. Like, you need to take this seriously, and it's absolutely shameful that we don't.
That's
my rant.
Well, like I said, I think it would be very easy for the rules of the game just to be like, we're going to stop the game while we do a concussion protocol. Because, I mean, I guess there's a world in which you could take advantage of that by, like, okay, you kill another team's momentum. I think that would be
fairly hard to game out to another team's advantage. And frankly, it's like the thing to do, because otherwise you're in a situation like this today where like Spurs are forced to play with 10 men. You know, you'll boot the ball around each other for a minute, and then you got to, like, you know, get right back to it. And it's just, I don't know. It's like, if you're serious about dealing with concussion issues, then you should treat it a little differently than some other injury issues. You know what I mean? Like stop the game. They stop the game when that guy's like lying on the pitch. Like, there's nothing to keep them from, like, you know, giving them at least like 5 minutes or something to go, like, okay, take him off the field and go check him out.
Right. I mean, a lot of people are making millions of dollars off of these games and sitting in a comfortable air conditioned box eating fucking chicken wings. You know, and these people are putting their bodies on the line and their long term health on the line. And you just need to take that seriously. Like, it is obscene to ask players to make the choice that Vertonghen did, which is, I don't want to leave the game during a Champions League semifinal. I'm going back on the pitch. And, you know, I get why he would make that decision. I get why he wants to do that. I get why a coach would say, okay, if you think you're fine, let's do it. But, like, it's just not enough. And, you know, what happens if Vertonghen goes up for another header? What happens if he gets, you know, another head-to-head clash? Like, it's just unconscionable.
It's
like, we need, like, independent medical advisors. Like, you need a whole, like, robust plan in place for when someone hurts their head, we are going to stop the football game because it's just fucking soccer. Who fucking cares? Like, this guy's life is on the line. Let's make sure it's okay.
We're going to make a 40-something fucking team World Cup and we can't figure this out. Like, it seems pretty fucking stupid to me. Because clearly, you know, I mean, and this is the harder thing to deal with, but, like, you can't trust these teams to handle it themselves, because we sure as shit didn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, you certainly can't, in a more understandable perspective on this, you can't trust the player because they, you know, I think Vertonghen did exactly what most players would do. His team's in a Champions League semifinal. He wants to compete. Like, he doesn't want to take himself out of that game. You got to take it out of his hands.
Right, exactly. It should never be up to the player to make that call. Like, that's, like, yes, he's, you know, knows how he's feeling and whatever, but, like, so does a doctor. Like, put it in someone's hands who, you know, isn't going to get fired by the club for making a conservative judgment call here and keeps Jan out of the game because, you know, he thinks he might have a concussion and he doesn't, and then we lose, and then this fucking physio who made an overzealous call on a player's health cost us the game. Like, that's a terrible position to put anybody in, you know? Give us an independent medical person, team, whatever, and do that evaluation, because the incentives are just, they're just all wrong the way it's set up.
It's awful. And hopefully Jan's fine. I mean, Sissoko made some comments. I don't know why he would have made them after the game that they expect him to play on Saturday. The Belgian reporter who isn't, I can't remember his name. I apologize if he listens to this. Who sort of does reporting on all the major Belgian players in England, he said that Vertonghen cleared the concussion protocols after the game, and then it was, what was it, nausea from the impact? What did he say?
I think nausea from loss of blood, or
I mean, which impact, is not yeah. completely inconceivable. He did lose a lot of blood. As someone who has watched Bret Hart versus Steve Austin more than once, that is confirmed a lot of blood. So, I mean, that's not completely out of the realm of possibility, but I mean, he definitely got his fucking bell rung. Let's stop pretending he didn't. But hopefully Jan's fine. I mean, I hope he's able to play this weekend and next week against Ajax, but I don't know about you. I'm skeptical that we're going to see him in either of those games. Certainly this weekend, but
I mean, we better not see him this weekend. I wouldn't put it past the team to play him.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him to play, honestly, but right. I mean, I don't know about you, but like,
concussion protocols, so.
I gotta say, like, I know I've seen worse sports injuries. I've seen worse things happen on a pitch. But, like, watching him, like, almost fall over and have to be literally carried off the pitch by two doctors was one of the more disturbing I mean, sights I've seen in this sports match. I mean,
it really was. It was harrowing to watch him, like, when he fell like that out of Pochettino and had to get, you know, two arms over shoulders carried off the pitch. Like, it's fucking bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to, I don't mean to bring this up in like a cynical way, but like, you know, I remember when like, we were playing Bolton and Fabrizio Luamba had a heart attack on the pitch and collapsed. And, you know, our medical team, a doctor from the stands ran out on there and like just the world stopped while we took care of this human being and made sure, you know, we could get him to a hospital safely and that he was stable and like, thank God he lived and whatever. But like for a team that like saw that so close up, I can't imagine if anybody is going to have like robust medical procedure. Like it should be us after seeing that. Like that, I mean, it shook me as a fan just watching that happen. I will never forget watching that man collapse like
well,
that.
Well, I mean, there's that famous picture of like Defoe barely holding it together with Bale. I mean, you know, I mean, neither of them are on this team, but it's still just, I don't know. It was really irritating that, you know, I mean, I don't want to like, you know, I'm sure Jan was saying all the right things. And, you know, I don't think, you know, if Jan had been like collapsing like that when he got up, I don't think, you know, he would have been left back on the pitch. But it's still not good that we didn't vet him more thoroughly. Like you said, like, Jan, go run up and down the hall a few times before we put you back in.
Yeah. Anyway, how about that West Ham?
No. Why talk about West Ham? We need to talk about the most important thing about this game before we move on, which was who is Harry Kane sitting with in the stands watching the match with, Ben?
My boy Tommy Carroll.
Tommy Carroll, cartilage free captain's very own Tommy Carroll. Bring those Panamanian drugs to the new White Hart Lane. I mean, I think we all do. I think we all do that. If Tottenham
had a midfielder.
If like Tottenham, exactly, it would have solved all our problems. I think we all do. If Tottenham were ever going to be in a Champions League semifinal, Tom Carroll was going to be there. And lo and behold, he was.
Oh, yeah. Club legend. You know, I'm sure he's...
I mean, I find it very interesting that, like, I don't know, maybe I'm so used to the psychology of, like, players not being fans that it's sort of easy to forget from, like, to put it in American terms, like, Tottenham is probably Tom Carroll's college club, basically. Like, I mean, he basically grew up here, and, you know, I would have imagined that, you know, he might have been bitter about the way that it ended, even though it, you know, wasn't completely contentious with him in the way that it might have been for someone like Andrews. But both him and Townsend seemed to be, like...
Townsend was there, too! Townsend was sitting in front of Harry Kane.
Was he in front of Kane? Okay, I just saw there was some, like, dude with a hat. I guess it was Kane's brother or someone on the other side of him, but, like... Townsend and Carroll seem to have stayed Spurs fans. Like, Townsend went to a match at the new White Hart Lane. I think he was at the first match at the new White Hart Lane.
He was there tonight. And, like, I think that's awesome.
No, it's great. It's just sort of like, I don't know, I guess I would expect them to be more bitter about the way things ended there. But I guess you figure they played all those years at the club. I mean, there's probably guys on the team. They, you know, Kane, obviously, but someone like Danny Rose and a few others that... you know, they clearly still have a lot of affection for. I mean, I think it's really cool, and it was just sort of weird to be like, oh, there's Tom Carroll.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, those guys have been here since they were children, and they stayed for, like, 6, 8, 10 years, you know, like, it's a huge chunk of their lives, and, you know, I think the college comparison is good in American sports. Like, you don't have that, you know. Your first professional team typically happens in your 20s, you know, in American sports, you know, maybe 19, but like, you know, it's just a team that you signed for before you get your real contract at a better team somewhere down the line. Whereas for these guys, like, this, they were raised with this.
Well, it was great. It was great seeing Tom. They should have, like, I don't know, put a mask on him and told and said he was Oliver Skip or something and gotten his ass on the field. But
if Tom Carroll had put on an Oliver Skip jersey and just walked out on the pitch, nobody at UEFA would have known the difference.
You know what? A bunch of fucking
bunch of fucking narcs on Spurs Twitter would have dropped a dime on him, I'll bet. So.
Bet. Well, that's something to think about for next season. Just put a lot of ringers on your bench in fake jerseys.
So let's...
Like, what do you mean? Yeah, this is Kyle Walker-Peters.
Wasn't Kyle Walker-Peters, you know, black?
He looks like.
Yeah, like, wasn't he black? No. But so
it's
Spurs...
Light past midfielder. It's fine.
Spurs have their Champions League adventures, and they have another game against Ajax next Wednesday, so that'll be what it is. But in the meantime, we have the quest to get in Champions League next year, period, full stop, in the league. Let's sort of go over where that stands. We obviously wet the bed a little bit. We lost to West Ham. I don't really want to get into any loss against West Ham into too much depth. Obviously, it's our first loss at the new stadium, which sort of sucks, being that it was against West Ham. But, you know, hey, they can celebrate that as their new cup final. I don't know, Ben. I thought the story of this was fatigue. I think we were a little bit unlucky early on not to score, and I don't think the refs did us a ton of favors. But, like, I think this team just looked gassed and, you know, like they needed a break. Do you have any thoughts on that or this match in particular?
Nope. That about covers it.
I mean, I don't think we looked worse. I think we just looked tired. Or if we looked worse, it was a product of being tired.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely looked tired. I mean, we weren't great.
We still should have scored earlier. I mean, we should have gotten a goal early on, but alas.
Yep, and they scored a dumb goal because that's what happens. And it's annoying that, like, as you know, assuming we see out the season, even if we don't make the Champions League final, like, it's been such a good season, whatever. To have, like, the two black marks on our season for me is losing our only game potentially at the new White Hart Lane to West Ham, and then ending our undrawable season against Arsenal. Like, the fact that it was these two fucking clubs.
One of those is weirder than the other, man. One of those is
not weird at all.
Anyway.
We drawn since. We didn't draw before. We are the undrawables. God damn it. But to have it be, like, again, they're minor nothing accomplishments. Winning, you know, again, we had a home win streak to White Hart Lane going back, like, 29 matches before the West Ham game. You know, it's a meaningless achievement, just like the undrawables, but it's fucking annoying.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just extra annoying because it's West Ham, just like the undrawables to me is extra annoying because it's Arsenal. Like, why is it that it's like the fucking shitty, these fucking teams that ruin my joy?
West Ham always does this. West Ham always fucks shit up like us for this.
Like, lose at home to Brighton. What, and beat West Ham. I don't care. That's fucking fine. But, like, don't lose to West Ham. Just, come on, guys. Don't do this to me.
Not like this. Not like this.
Not like this.
I mean, so, yeah, so fortunately for us, as bad as our bedwetting was, every other team trying to make the top four had an equally bad day at the office. No one really took advantage of it. I guess you could argue Chelsea did, but they needed a win, not a draw. Now we're at the point where if Spurs win either of their final two matches, and we play Bournemouth this weekend, and we play Everton our final weekend, then we are going to finish into top four, and we're going to finish above Arsenal, which are really the only two things I want, and I don't really care if it's third and fourth as long as we're ahead of Arsenal. So, we have Bournemouth this weekend. Bournemouth's a real hot and cold team, right, Ben?
Yeah, they've had some really weird performances. They, you know, lose badly and win dramatically in equal measure. They just had a kind of a barnstormer 3-3 draw with Southampton, but shortly before that, they battered Brighton 5-0. They've beaten Chelsea 4-0. And in between, they've lost to Fulham, they've lost to Burnley. Like, who the fuck knows what's going on with this team? They lost 5-1 to Arsenal. You know, they lost 3-0 to Liverpool. But they beat West Ham, so who knows?
I mean, like, could we lose to them? Yes. Should we lose to them? Probably not.
So, the thing about Bournemouth is they have the most goals scored outside the top six, but they also have the most goals conceded outside the bottom three. Like, they're a very erratic team. You just never know which version of this team is going to show up.
And they are playing this at home, so, I mean, who the hell knows?
Yeah. They're a weird fucking team.
I mean, it would be really nice to wrap this game up, but it would have been nicer if we'd wrapped it up against West Ham last week, and we could just literally run our under-18s out for this one. But I think we're actually going to have to expend some effort.
That's really what kills me, honestly, about the West Ham game. It's not so much losing to West Ham, which does kill me, but squad management between this game and Ajax, which are both pretty much must-wins. I do not want to leave our Champions League fates for next season in the hands of one game against Everton at home. At least now we have, like, two bites of the cherry. But, you know, had we won at West Ham, it would be over. We'd be in the Champions League. And we could rest up for Ajax. Like, you know, they took a whole week off to play us ahead of this game, which is fucking bullshit, by the way.
Yeah. Might explain, oh, they got so much energy. Look at them running around the pitch. Like, oh, why is that fucking going on?
Yeah. If you don't know, Ajax and the whole Dutch league suspended their fixtures this past weekend so they could get extra recs against Spurs. Which is a fucking horseshit.
Poor little lambs will actually have to play a game this weekend.
Right, so now we have a game that we kind of have to win ahead of a game that we definitely have to win. And we don't have any players, and rotating the squad is going to be hard. And I think
the only thing
I know for sure is Vincent Janssen better fucking start.
Yeah, I completely... completely agree. I don't know. I just hope Bournemouth is on the fucking beach. I mean, they don't have anything to play for, so. Hopefully Brighton can ruin Arsenal's week, and I don't know, Chelsea can do whatever they got to do against them, but.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Our rivals have Brighton and Huddersfield this weekend, so. Not great.
Yeah, I don't know. I just... all of our rivals have been doing their best to get us in the Champions League next year, so. I appreciate that, at least.
Yeah, I mean, those are just two teams that are just very bad. I mean, Huddersfield is just an absolute shit show. Brighton scored their first goal in, like, a month and a half this past weekend. You know, I think they're pretty much banked points for Arsenal and United. So, counting on them. Because we need to take 2 points from our next two matches. So, if we draw against Bournemouth and draw against Everton, we're in, regardless of what Arsenal and Man U do. But if they both lose, then we could lose out and it'd be fine. However, given their opponents this weekend, I just don't see that happening.
No, go beat Bournemouth. Like, it's really that simple. And frankly, we should be as well rested as is realistic for that game, given that we played on Tuesday. And
I will remind you, Vincent Janssen's only Premier League goal from open play came against Bournemouth 2 years ago. So I think this is his moment.
I think you're right.
And I know Jack Wilshere won't be on the pitch, so it won't be as easy as last time, but...
Remember when he signed for West Ham? Me neither.
Neither does West Ham.
Well, I mean, big weekend coming up, so yeah. The thing, one last thought I'll leave you with is we were talking about all these other teams that we're playing against is I just feel like we are, like, if with our front four, and we're going to have, like, we're going to sign, like, some just halfway decent midfielder this year so we have a real midfield. And then, like, you just stick that guy in a team with Desk or whatever, and we're just going to look like Greased Death, and I'm going to look really... I'm just going to be so mad about... I'm going to feel like we squandered a year when, you know, that attack just looks so dynamic with another midfielder. And, fuck, we better sign some people this summer.
Yeah, imagine how easy it might have been to win this Champions League final.
Exactly, exactly.
If we only had reinforcements this summer.
Ugh. Anyway. Any final thoughts, Ben?
You know, I hope we win games and not lose games.
Fair enough, fair enough. Deep thoughts.
That's a profound insight you guys come to Wheel of Dealer Radio for.
Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs, and you can find me making terrible jokes on Wheel of Dealer Radio.
You can find me making those same terrible jokes on Wheel of Dealer Radio, and you can find me on the Twitters at SkipJack0079, and don't forget to check out our LinkedIn page at Brett Rainbow. For Ben, and of course, for Brett Rainbow, I'm your host, Greg. Thank you very much, and come on, you Spurs.